Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is your Calls One Planet series. The Environmental Protection Agency is one of the most important federal agencies in the country. It is tasked with protecting people and the environment from significant health risks, among many other things. The agency also sponsors and conducts research and develops and enforces environmental regulations. Last year, four EPA scientists turned whistleblowers alleged that managers and career staff in the agency's Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention tampered with the assessments of dozens of chemicals to make them appear safer. The Intercept's Sharon Lerner has reported on detailed evidence of pressure within the EPA to minimize or remove evidence of potential adverse effects of the chemicals, including neurological effects, birth defects, and cancer. In March, The Intercept reported that following the whistleblower's allegation, the EPA commissioned an internal workplace survey that reveals a work environment that agency scientists and other staff describe as hostile, oppressive, toxic, extremely toxic, and incredibly toxic. Sarah Gallagher, a scientist who joined the Office of Pollution Prevention and Toxics in May 2019, told The Intercept the combative turn of her career has been a surprise. She said, quote, like a lot of us who are in this, we came to work at the EPA because I wanted to preserve the environment for our children's children. It's infuriating that I have to push back against managers to do that, end quote. Well, joining us to discuss the whistleblower's claims, chemical regulation, and public health is Kyla Bennett, a lawyer who works for the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, an organization that supports current and former public employees who seek a higher standard of environmental ethics and scientific integrity within their agencies. They do this work by defending whistleblowers, shining a light on improper or illegal government actions. Kyla Bennett represents four EPA scientists who have come forward as whistleblowers. Kyla worked at the EPA from 1990 to 1999. She first came into contact with Peer as a whistleblower and eventually decided to leave the EPA because she felt she could be more effective working for Peer than she could working for the government. Hi, Kyla. Thank you so much for your work and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Rose.
Well, first off, let's talk about what has changed since President Biden came into office. As we have reported many times, under the Trump administration, the agency was just gutted. 800 staffers left. They dismantled regulations, cozied up with the oil and gas and chemical industries. So what are your thoughts so far about the Biden administration? Have they done enough to roll back Trump-era anti-health and anti-environment policies?
Absolutely not. They really haven't. And while it is true that the Trump administration was really the low point for EPA and all our environmental agencies at the federal level, what is not true is that the Democrats have fixed things, because they haven't. And it's funny because one reporter once asked me a couple months ago, what was the heyday for EPA? And I had to think about it, but my response was really probably the Nixon years. You know, the EPA has not been good for many, many years. And while the Biden administration has done some good things and has undone some of the awful things that the Trump administration has done, they are not doing nearly enough to protect human health and the environment.
So what explains this? Can you explain to us how the EPA actually works? How does the hierarchy work? Who makes the ultimate decisions there?
Sure. Well, there is an administrator, and under the Biden administration, it's Administrator Michael Regan. And then they have Senate-appointed people who are the assistant administrators for all the different divisions, if you will, within EPA. And then there are, of course, all of the mid-level management, even pretty high-level management, and the staff that remains stable across different administrations. When I was at EPA, I was there for almost 10 years. I was there for, I think, three administrations. And things do change when the administration changes, absolutely. Because, for example, there are 10 regional offices of EPA plus headquarters in Washington, D.C. And each of those 10 regions has a regional administrator, which is appointed by the administrator of EPA. So it's true that each administration can come on and put their own fingerprints on the agency, if you will. So that is what happens. So every time there's a new administration, you get new priorities, new ways of doing things. Things do change. And where we are right now is in not so good of a place.
Well, how do you think EPA Administrator Michael Regan is doing so far?
It's funny because Administrator Regan says some of the right things. He gave a very fiery speech in North Carolina about PFAS, per- and polyfluoroalkyl substances. And we were all, you know, thinking, oh, what a breath of fresh air. Finally, EPA is going to do something. But they're not walking the talk. So again, I think he's doing some good things. I do like his attention to environmental justice issues, because it is true in this country that low-income and minority residents take the bulk of environmental degradation and pollution, and that's totally wrong. So I do appreciate that, because we've never really had that focus before. But still, he hasn't tackled the really big issues. And I don't know if that's coming from above or if it's his own personal preference. In other words, I don't know how much influence President Biden or Congress has on Michael Regan's ability to get things done at the EPA, or where they want him to focus. I don't know that he's got autonomy.
What about the revolving door? One of the allegations from the whistleblowers is that there is a revolving door between the industry and the EPA. So before we get into specifics about the chemicals, let's talk about the revolving door. What is the relationship like between EPA workers who then leave and go work for the chemical industry, for example?
It's very cozy. And just one clarification, we actually have 5 EPA whistleblowers, and many of them worked in the Office of Pesticides before they moved over to new chemicals. And Sharon Lerner, one of the things she discovered is that of the 9 office directors for the Office of Pesticides over the years, 7 of them went on to work for industry after they left. The other 2 retired. So it's practically 100% of the people who can, it is 100% of the people who continue to work. The ones who headed up the Office of Pesticides then went on to work for the pesticide agency. And it happens not just at that level, but also at lower levels. There is one manager in the chemicals division who has gone back and forth between EPA and industry 4 times. So the relationship between industry and EPA is way too cozy. And it's almost as if EPA is working for industry rather than the American public.
We also have to follow the money. And The Guardian had a piece last April. The nation's top PFAS manufacturers executed a lobbying and campaign donation blitz in recent years as the federal government attempted to regulate the toxic compounds. A Guardian analysis of campaign finance records found spending on PFAS issues jumped as lawmakers introduced over 100 new pieces of legislation in 2019 and 2020. And then here is a piece from Roll Call just in February. A major lobbying arm for the chemical industry boosted its spending by 92% at the end of last year compared with the same period in 2020. In the last quarter of 2021, the American Chemistry Council spent $7.3 million lobbying Congress. That's up from $3.8 million in the fourth quarter of 2020. So what about the influence of all of this money?
Oh, absolutely. It all comes down to money. And people often ask me, why? Why are managers deleting hazards, deleting the information that a particular chemical, for example, causes cancer? Why on earth would they do that? I mean, they too are exposed to these chemicals. Presumably their children, their grandchildren, their spouses, themselves, everybody is affected when a chemical goes out on market. What could possibly make them think that this is okay? And the only thing I can think of is it's money. It all comes down to money, and it's frightening. We have to get money out of politics. There's no other way. And that is part of the problem.
And we should say that the American Chemistry Council includes some of the biggest players and powerhouses, ExxonMobil, Chevron, Dow Chemical, and DuPont, and then a lot of companies most people have probably never heard of.
Absolutely. And it's interesting that several of President Trump's former EPA appointees have now joined the ACC. They've joined the American Chemistry Council, totally unsurprising. But of course, they were always working for industry when they were at EPA. And some of the managers seem to be working for industry there now.
So we've done a lot of shows about chemicals over the years and have learned that the vast majority have never had risk assessments. Today, are there about 80,000 chemicals on the market?
That's correct. So what happened was when TSCA, the Toxic Substances Control Act, passed in 1976, all of the chemicals that were already on market, in the market, in commerce, were just automatically grandfathered in. And since then, EPA continues to approve new chemicals. So if you look at EPA's own database from 2016 until the present, they have prohibited zero chemicals from entering the market. In other words, everything that comes before them gets approved unless it's withdrawn voluntarily by the submitter. So yes, there are tens of thousands of chemicals on the market that have never gone through any kind of risk assessment. And then new ones that are coming onto the market that are going through what our clients tell us are flawed risk assessments.
How does the EPA justify this, that they have prevented zero chemicals from going to the market?
I don't think they bother to justify it. I mean, it is what it is. And, you know, the scary thing, the way that when people think about EPA doing risk assessments on new chemicals, they probably picture people in white coats in labs with test tubes and Erlenmeyer flasks and, you know, doing research under a hood. And that's not the way it works. The way the statute is set up is that these risk assessors sitting in the new chemicals division get sometimes only the name of a chemical and then one abstract of an industry-sponsored research paper, and they're given 90 days to determine whether that chemical is going to present a risk to human health or the environment. 90 days. And they are often prevented from asking for more information from the industry because, of course, that's expensive to the industry, and we wouldn't want to do that, would we? So they have to look at what we call analogs. Those are structurally similar chemicals that already have a bunch of data associated with them. Hmm. And they do their best to try to figure out how risky these chemicals are. And they try to be cautious, but they are prevented from doing what they think is right, what they think is protective.
As you said, The Intercept's Sharon Lerner reports that the EPA has the authority to prevent new chemicals from entering the market if they present an unreasonable risk to human health or the environment. 3,835 new chemical applications were submitted to the agency between June 2016 and July 2021. That's a lot of chemicals. What are all of these new? Are they all new? And then what are they used for?
They are new and they're used for a variety of different things, but some of them also contain existing chemicals. So sometimes they're mixtures. Sharon wrote one story about a chemical, and this is a rare instance when we were able to actually name the chemical because this is a whole nother problem with EPA, is that so much of this information is cloaked by confidential business information or CBI. In other words, we're not allowed to know what the chemicals are, what the structure is, where it's made, who makes it, or what it's used for. So many of these chemicals, we have no idea. With this one chemical that Sharon was able to write about, it was a new chemical that contained about 50% of an existing chemical called PCBTF, which is a carcinogen. And yet there were not risks associated with it. And the new chemical, which contained 50% of this carcinogen, was cleared to go out on market.
And what would that chemical be used for?
That particular one was used for auto paints. Hmm. So people who are, people who work in garages, painting autos, things like that. Yep.
Wow.
But a lot of these chemicals are things that you and I could buy at Home Depot or Lowe's or Target or Walmart or even CVS.
Right.
These are things that are on the shelves that everyday people can buy.
So the new chemicals approved by the EPA, what is the process involved? I mean, to think that over the course of 5 years, how the heck do you even review 3,835 new chemical applications?
Right. Yeah, that's scary. And there's only a handful of these risk assessors. And remember, we have five clients at EPA. They all used to be in new chemicals. Three of them have been transferred out of new chemicals and are currently working in existing chemicals. So they are trying to go through and do risk assessments of the existing chemicals, the ones that were grandfathered in, but they are only able to do about 10 a year. And as you said, there are tens of thousands of these chemicals on the inventory currently on the market. So it's going to literally take them thousands of years to get through that list. So it's very frightening.
We should say that all of the allegations we're going to discuss are supported by dozens of internal emails with supervisors, meeting summaries, and other documents. Is there anything else you'd like to add to that list?
Oh yeah, we have audio recordings. So we had a couple of, and Sharon put those in her articles. She's really been an incredible journalist here. She's done exhaustive research and she really understands. This is difficult science and Sharon really grasps it and does a great job, I think, distilling it. But we have two audio tapes in her stories. One of them is one of the managers asking for a science override button. She was asking the contractors for EPA to have a button she could push to override scientific opinions of the risk assessors. So that was a little frightening. But, you know, there are also things, hair on fire cases, they call them. So, for example, if there's a new chemical that comes in, an industry makes a phone call to either a congressional or to an EPA manager and says, where the hell is my approval? I need it now. It automatically becomes a hair on fire case, and it's moved up in the line and pushed through really quickly, which is not the way this is supposed to work.
Wow. Well, going back to the example you were describing about overriding it. So just to quote one of these division managers. So for example, say there are 9 open discussions, but then we suddenly had to expedite a case due to some hair on fire situation. Do we need 9 people to go in and close out these discussions for it to move forward? Or is there an all-powerful person like name removed can come in and override everything? Sharon Lerner reports ultimately the division manager and the consultant settled on just this plan at the end of the meeting. Quote, yes, we'd like a button or something, and then we'll assign whoever that person or persons may be to override everything, the division manager said. Okay, override, meaning this turns green, the consultant clarifies. Yes, okay, perfect. So basically, if a scientist who has a lot of credentials comes in and says, this chemical may be harmful to public health, they just want to completely override that and ignore it.
Correct.
How long has this been?
It's hard to wrap your mind around it. It's really difficult to wrap your mind around it because the EPA, their mission is to protect human health and the environment. Their name is the Environmental Protection Agency. It's not the Industry Protection Agency. It's not everything's polluted anyway. It's not the Economic Protection Agency. It's the Environmental Protection Agency, and they are not fulfilling their mission.
Well, what's so frustrating about this is here's a study from Harvard in 2016, unsafe levels of toxic chemicals found in drinking water for 6 million Americans. ProPublica, June 2018, suppressed study, the EPA underestimated dangers of widespread chemicals. I mean, we're talking about a major public health crisis in this country. We're talking about, I mean, look, just look at the data. It shows effects of cholesterol levels, raising the risk of cancer, depending on your PFAS exposure, on and on and on.
Yeah, isn't that scary? We do have a national crisis, particularly with PFAS. I mean, look at Flint, Michigan. They still have lead in their water and they also have PFAS in their water. But PFAS is a great example. It's a national crisis. EPA's recent risk assessment done in November of 2021, and this is one of the good things that Biden's EPA has done. They did do a new risk assessment for three PFAS, for PFOA, PFOS, and Gen X, and they found that there is virtually no safe level of at least these three. Now, there are thousands of PFAS, thousands. Guess how many EPA regulates? Zero. They don't regulate one.
Wow. Well, and these PFAS are called forever chemicals.
Correct. They are called forever chemicals because each PFAS has a backbone of this carbon-fluorine chain. And the bond between the carbon atoms and the fluorine atoms is one of the strongest known to humans, and it's almost impossible to break.
And these chemicals have been used since the 50s in nonstick cookware, outdoor gear, carpet, furniture, other consumer products. I mean, we all have come into contact with this.
Absolutely. They were actually discovered accidentally in the 40s. EPA has known since at least the 90s, probably the 80s, maybe even earlier, that these things are incredibly toxic. Certainly the companies knew and they hid it. For those of you listening, if you haven't seen the movie Dark Waters, which is a kind of a docudrama with Mark Ruffalo about Rob Ballot's efforts to get this, shine some light into the whole PFAS contamination issue. It's a fabulous movie, but it shows you how incredibly heartbreaking this is. These companies know that they're dealing with toxic chemicals. They know it's poisoning people. They know it's killing people, but it's a cost of doing business. So they try to hide it.
If we can just talk about one example before break, and Sharon Lerner writes about this in The Intercept. Elise Osterweil, one of the scientists, said she was at first reluctant to speak up about the intense pressure she faced from her supervisors to remove references to potential toxicity from the assessment of new chemicals. The assessments, which use animal studies to gauge a chemical's potential risk to humans, can lead the agency to place limits on its use or to ban it entirely. In the case of the substance that Osterweil was reviewing in February of last year, the animal studies suggested potential for harm. Rats exposed to a single dose of the chemical had become lethargic, lost weight, and had trouble moving. Some became comatose and others died. And Osterweil said, usually with this type of acute study, there are no effects. This was a red flag that needed further information. But when she said in a meeting that she needed more data, one of her supervisors responded with a series of questions. Look at the data. Look at the data. Look at it again. What do you see? Osterweil said, I knew she wanted me to make the hazards go away, and even said, why don't you take a look at the actual data again, and maybe the hazards will go away. And this is just one example.
Yes. And Rose, part of the reason this has been probably the most difficult year and a half of my time at Pure, I've been with Pure for 21 years, but these five whistleblowers at EPA, it's just heartbreaking to me, not only because they feel a responsibility to the American public. They didn't want to be whistleblowers. They didn't want to be in this position. When you're a whistleblower, you're a pariah. You know, they are facing retaliation, bullying. Nobody wants to talk to them. They're afraid that they've, you know, bombed their careers, that they'll never get another job again. This is not easy for them. And it's heartbreaking for me to see these people who all they wanted to do was to use their chemistry and their toxicology knowledge to protect the environment, to protect Americans, and they're not able to. And one of them said to me, I don't want to be responsible for approving the next PFAS, the next PFOA. I don't want to be that person. Mm. And it's just, it's despicable what's happening to them there. It really, truly is. I've never had to deal with something this devastating emotionally for the clients and for the public.
Well, we're going to take a quick break. Today, we're speaking with Kyla Bennett, a lawyer who works for the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. Kyla represents five EPA scientists who have come forward as whistleblowers. And you can find all of the reports that we're citing at yourcallradio.org. We'll be back after this. The This is Your Calls One Planet series. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we are spending the hour with Kyla Bennett, a lawyer who works with the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, an organization that supports current and former public employees who seek a higher standard of environmental ethics and scientific integrity within their agencies. They do this by defending whistleblowers and shining a light on improper or illegal government actions. Kyla Bennett represents five EPA scientists who have come forward as whistleblowers. They allege that managers and staff in the EPA's Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention tampered with the assessments of dozens of chemicals to make them appear safer. Kyla, before the break, you said that this is just some of the most heartbreaking work you've ever done, which really says a lot because you worked for the EPA in the 90s. You were a whistleblower, and we'll talk about that later in the show. So you've seen a lot. So what is it about these five scientists that kind of made it all even worse, kind of pushed it all over the edge?
I think it's the emotional toll that they're dealing with that really hurts me. Hmm. I talk to them every day, and they're in pain. You know, they're working in an incredibly toxic environment, no pun intended. And we are trying so hard. We've been trying. They came to us in September of 2021. Or was it September of 2020? My God, it's been a while. They came to us. We've been working with them for a long time. Hmm. And they really thought that we all thought that with the Biden administration coming on, that we'd be able to do something, that there was a window of opportunity when Biden came into, so it was, must have been 2020. When he came in, we thought, okay, here's his chance. He can say, he can blame it on Trump, even though this really wasn't all Trump's fault. But the Biden administration could have come in and say, we're going to clean up this division. We're going to make this statute work. We're going to protect American health. And they didn't. They buckled down. They dug their heels in. They circled the wagons. And they are protecting the very managers who are doing this. So when we first realized that the Biden administration wasn't going to take this seriously, it was more devastating than anything, because I really had hope that they would. Now, that being said, the Inspector General at EPA is doing a very comprehensive investigation, and I am cautiously optimistic that we will be vindicated. But the Inspector General, the two downsides to the Inspector General is that it's a very long process, number one. And number two, EPA doesn't have to implement the recommendations of the IG. So even if the IG comes out and says, hey, EPA, you did this, this, and this wrong, EPA can say, okay, thanks, and not do anything to change it. And that's really my biggest fear.
If the report comes out and says you must make these recommendations and nothing changes, what kind of pressure actually works, public pressure works, to force the EPA to make changes?
Congress. I mean, I think, you know, so the good thing about the Inspector General is that they are independent. They are not biased in any way. So whatever answer they come up with, we will abide by. If they come out and say, you know what, your clients were wrong and everything is on the up and up, I'm going to have to listen to them. If they come out the way I think it's going to come out and say, yeah, there are some issues here, the only thing we can do and the only thing the public can do if EPA doesn't make changes immediately, is to call your congresspeople, to call your senators, call your representatives and say, you have to do something because this is impacting all of us. I mean, how crazy is it that in 2022, the United States of America does not have safe drinking water? Mm.
No, exactly. We all have to have little EPA departments in our own homes and do a ton of research around water, around what kind of dishwashing soap, yep, cleaning supplies. I mean, and it takes time. I do it for, you know, my parents, my family. It takes time. You have to know how to do this kind of research.
Absolutely. And it also takes knowledge, and not everybody has that knowledge.
Exactly.
Where to do the research and how to interpret what you're reading. You know, even those fake fragrances, when my husband and I walk our dogs around the block at night and people have their dryers running, I can smell that fake smell from the fabric softener, you know, and I'm thinking to myself, oh, I know what's in there. And and they're carcinogens, you know, and I'm thinking, but nobody else knows. Nobody else knows. And telling people, they think you're nuts. You know, even with PFAS, I've had some people on my town Facebook group, because where I live in Massachusetts, my water is contaminated. I can't drink my water. I can't take showers in my water without risking my health. We have to have filters on our showers, and we're building a town filtration system to the tune of over $9 million, but it's not built yet.
Wow.
And some people think, because they can't see it, smell it, or taste it, that it's a bunch of hooey, you know, PFAS. One of them wrote, I love the taste of PFAS in the morning. You know, it's just, they don't understand. And, you know, EPA was, that agency was formed in order to stop this pollution and protect human health. And here we have President Biden with his cancer moonshot. You know, he wants to eradicate cancer. Well, darn it, he's not going to be able to eradicate cancer while simultaneously pumping out these carcinogens onto the market without any limits at all. It's not going to happen.
What strikes you about the science around the health effects of these chemicals?
How little is known and how little is required of these companies. You know, here in the United States, the way it works is kind of like our legal system. A chemical is innocent until proven guilty. And the burden of proving it guilty is on this handful of risk assessors in the new chemicals division, and they don't have enough time, enough information, or enough experts to do the job comprehensively. And so that's what's so frightening to me, is that we are assuming that all of these chemicals are innocent. In other countries, it's the other way around, where the chemicals are assumed guilty until the industry proves that they're innocent. And we're not doing that. And that's why we have so many chemicals on the market, in stores, being used in this country that are banned everywhere else in the world. Mm. Pesticides, things like asbestos. I think we're probably the last country to be using asbestos.
Well, and in this case, the pressure within the agency was to minimize or remove evidence of potential adverse effects of the chemicals, including neurological effects, birth defects, and cancer.
Yep.
You know, and the horrible thing about this, Kyla, is I feel like every week I hear, or a friend hears, or someone I know who has cancer.
Yeah.
And the hard thing about this is I so wish one day we could figure this out, but you cannot say, well, you know, you lived in an area with contaminated water and that's why you have the cancer, or you use this product for 10 years. I mean, I don't mean to put this on people, because it's not people's fault, but it's just, that's why this is so difficult. And people say, well, I'm going to die anyway, so what am I supposed to do?
And it's also really difficult, because proving that causation link between a chemical and cancer is really, really difficult. If you think about how many cancer clusters have been proven in this country, it's very few. There are far more than the ones that we think about. You know, for example, West Virginia with PFAS, or Love Canal, or, you know, the very few cancer clusters around the country. There are many, many, many cancer clusters, and most cancers, you know, obviously there are some genetic cancers, and there are also sometimes people are genetically predisposed to cancer and they need an environmental kind of kickoff to get that gene to express itself and to cause the cancer. But so many of our cancers are environmentally caused. Even some diseases, you know, they're thinking about ALS, might be from environmental causes. We have no idea how many of these diseases out there are environmentally caused. But here's an example. Me, I have been so careful my whole life. I eat only organic. I'm vegan. I have a LEED certified house with no toxic anything, no carpets. I probably have one of the lowest PFAS levels in my blood in the country because I've just been avoiding things like carpets and upholstery and things like that for my whole life. I had a brain tumor 2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Where did it come from? No one knows. No one knows. And I can't help but think it had to be exposure because I'm a very clean liver and I exercise, I eat right. I have to believe it had to be a pesticide or a chemical that I was exposed to inadvertently. And I am one of hundreds of millions of people who are exposed to these things. I mean, most of our water supply is contaminated with PFAS across the country. Most of us.
Wow. I'm sorry to hear that. How are you doing?
I didn't mean to bring up something that personal, but I'm fine. I actually had a brain scan yesterday and it's clear. So hopefully it won't come back, but it was a very rare tumor. They don't know what causes it. I asked yesterday, I was like, could it be PFAS? And they were like, we have no idea. We have no idea. And that's what's so scary is that these things, the chemicals that we're using today can cause cancer 10 or 20 years down the line, and we'll never be able to make that connection. So the best thing for people to do is to try to minimize your risk the best you can with all chemicals, because we just don't know. And we don't know because EPA is not doing its job.
Who's actually studying these effects, these causal effects? Again, Harvard put out a press release in 2017 about a new Superfund center launched to investigate industrial chemicals. Are there a lot of studies going on right now?
There are studies going on right now, but unfortunately, it's really hard with humans because there are so many conflating factors. When you think about it, if you're part of a lawsuit, let's say you're part of a class action lawsuit for some contamination issue, the questions the lawyers ask you are things like, how many times have you flown in your life? Did you ever have somebody in your family who smoked cigarettes? Did you smoke cigarettes? You know, did you ever live near a dry cleaning facility that used TCE? That there are so many factors out there that could have caused or contributed to your cancer that it's really hard to say substance A caused cancer B. And of course we can't test on humans. You know, it's not ethical to dose people with carcinogens to say, okay, you know, we now know that, 5 milligrams per day of this chemical will give you ovarian cancer because we tested all these women. Doesn't work that way. But they can look at workers. For example, DuPont did studies on their workers with PFAS and found higher rates of birth defects, higher rates of cancer. And then, of course, our firefighters around this country, 75% of on-duty firefighter deaths in 2019 were due to cancer. Mm-hmm. And that's because there's PFAS in their turnout gear. The gear they wear has such high levels of PFAS, it's being absorbed through their skin, they're inhaling it, and they're all getting testicular cancer, brain cancer, kidney cancer, and they're dying. So there are those type of quote-unquote experiments, you know, in real life situations, which, and I keep using this word, but I can't think of another one, it's heartbreaking. I have a lot of firefighter clients who have cancer, and it is just devastating.
Wow. Today, we are speaking with Kyla Bennett, a lawyer who works for the Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility, an organization that supports current and former public employees who seek a higher standard of environmental ethics. Kyla represents 5 EPA scientists who have come forward as whistleblowers, saying that they have received and they're under pressure within the agency to minimize or remove evidence of potential adverse effects of chemicals, including neurological effects, birth defects, and cancer. And I hope you can take the time to read some of the articles by The Intercept's Sharon Lerner, just to go into more detail than we can do here in an hour. Let's spend a little bit more time talking about these 5 scientists. They hold doctorates in toxicology, chemistry, biochemistry, and medicinal chemistry. And they're supposed to identify potential harms posed by new chemicals. They said that they tried going to their managers and filing complaints internally, but nothing happened. Is that right?
That is right. So EPA and actually all federal agencies have scientific integrity policies. EPA has one. It sounds good on its face, but there's no mechanism to actually enforce the provisions of the scientific integrity policy. So what our clients tried to do, the first thing we did, they filed what's called a differing scientific opinion under the scientific integrity policy. They brought it to their managers and they said, hey, we don't agree, and here's why. And no, nothing happened. Nothing happened. They were forced to come out. And when we were working with Sharon Lerner to write that very first article, we weren't going to use their names because we knew that that would bring a world of hurt down on them. But when we sent the disclosure to the Inspector General, we also sent it to Dr. Michal Friedhoff, who's the political appointee for the Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention, under which these scientists work. And the reason we sent it to Dr. Friedhoff is because in order to get the whistleblower protections, you have to tell somebody in their chain of command, because if you think about it, otherwise, if somebody in their chain of command doesn't know that these people are whistleblowers, then they can get fired and we can say, hey, that's retaliation. And they can say, oh, really? We had no idea they were whistleblowers, so it couldn't have been retaliation. So you have to tell someone in their chain of command. We told Dr. Friedhoff within 3 minutes of her getting this disclosure, which was something like 30-something or 50-something pages. It was long. 3 minutes after receiving it, she emailed it to a bunch of people, including some of the managers that were named in the disclosure.
Wow.
They actually had a meeting to discuss, I assume, how they were going to deal with this. And it really compromised, I think, the Inspector General investigation. But that's why we put our clients' names in that first article, because we needed to get control back of the narrative. We wanted to make sure that they were protected and we got their side of the story out.
What has happened to the five scientists, or what happened to them after their names were released?
It was very uncomfortable for them. You know, some people were very angry at them. Some of them were very supportive of them. Sharon's latest article in her series of nine so far, article number nine, talks about the survey that was done of that office, which shows that the vast majority of people agree with our clients. But it's the managers who are continuing to retaliate against them. And so it's been hell, really, for them to continue to work there, for most of them. Some of them have it a little bit easier than others, but for a lot of them, it's just been hellish.
And they're all still there?
They are. One of them is currently on leave, but they are still all employed by EPA.
There's so many examples we can talk about, Kyla. Let's, for example, talk about Martin Phillips, who is a chemist and faced pushback when he was assessing a mixture of compounds in January 2020. One component of the product, which was to be used in cleaning solutions, is a chemical that caused birth defects and miscarriage by experiment on rats. So tell us what happened to Martin Phillips.
Martin is actually, he's actually doing okay. He got moved out of New Chemicals. He got put in existing chemicals in the data gathering and analysis division, and he is doing okay. They're all struggling, but he is doing okay. But it's been difficult because he was moved out of New Chemicals along with Dr. Sarah Gallagher and Dr. William Irwin. All three of them were in New Chemicals, and they were all moved out. So that's not necessarily where they want to be. But it was a lateral move and there was nothing they could do about it. But they all believe that they were moved out because of their complaints about what was going on in New Chemicals.
And Phillips and another risk assessor noted the developmental effects in the chemicals hazard assessment, which must by law be added to the chemicals safety data sheet. But the company that submitted the product for approval balked at that requirement. The day after the assessment, Phillips wrote, was finalized, a representative of the company who recently worked in the same division of the EPA met with his colleagues and his supervisor, whom she had known from her time at the agency, and he was not invited to attend the meeting.
Correct. Wow. And that's a big thing that's happening. That's a problem, is that if you're not finding these risks, it doesn't end up on the safety data sheet. So the workers are unaware that some of these chemicals that they're dealing with are incredibly toxic and hazardous to them. So they may not be taking the appropriate protection. They may not be wearing PPE or dealing with these chemicals correctly, because they simply don't know what problems they can cause. And that's what's so scary. You know, these factory workers and the fence line communities that live around the factories are really guinea pigs. Right. And it's not fair. They're not disposable. They're human beings. They should be not only aware of what it is that they're dealing with, but they should be trained, and they should be told what they can do to protect themselves, and given the option to not have to deal with these chemicals if they're pregnant, for example, or immunocompromised or whatever. I mean, it's really not fair to the people.
Where is Congress on all of this? I mean, Representative Ro Khanna, who represents Silicon Valley, has asked that the EPA conduct an audit to identify risk assessments that were altered without the knowledge or consent of the risk assessor, and investigate violations of the EPA's records management policy. He said, clean, cancer-free air and water is not a given in this country. I will continue to monitor the situation and ensure that these scientists' concerns are addressed. But what about other politicians? Is anyone else on board with trying to expose this and make changes within the EPA?
Yes, we've had some wonderful congressionals who have weighed in, written letters to the IG, and written letters to EPA expressing their concern, all Democrats, of course. But the bottom line remains, EPA keeps saying, we take these concerns very seriously, but we're not going to do anything until the Inspector General releases their report. We don't want to take any action until we see the Inspector General's report. So nothing is changing in the meantime.
Does Michael Regan actually have the power to make changes?
Oh, yeah. I mean, what we would love to see is, you know, they laterally moved 3 out of 5 of our clients out of new chemicals. They should laterally move the managers who are named in these complaints, put them somewhere else. They can still make their same salary. They can still work. But they should get out of new chemicals until such time as that Inspector General report clears them, if that's what's going to happen. Why can't that happen? It's not happening. And Michael Regan could do that. Dr. Michal Friedhoff could do that. But they're refusing to. They're circling the wagons. And I don't understand it. And that's what's so frustrating to me, is that Democrats are always seen as, you know, the environmental party. But honestly, we have not had a good environmental president in, oh gosh, I don't even know when we had a good environment. Maybe if Al Gore had won, he did win. But, you know, maybe if Al Gore had been president, maybe he would have done something. But we really haven't had anyone. And, you know, to be fair, there are so many issues, the pandemic, you know, the war in Ukraine, the economy. I understand there are so many issues, but this is something that's really critical to national security. I mean, we're talking about the health of a country. We're talking about cancer rates. We're talking about deaths. Why is this not more important? I don't understand why this isn't as important as the economy or as the pandemic. We're talking about hundreds of millions of people in the United States of America who do not have safe drinking water. Why is that not an utmost priority for EPA or for President Biden?
In our remaining minute, Kyla, what can people do? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are looking around thinking, how can I keep my family safe, my community safe? And then on a larger level, what's most effective to pressure the EPA?
I think Congress is the most effective way to pressure EPA. And if people could call or write to their senators or their representatives, this division of EPA needs much more funding. They need more risk assessors. They need way more people and way more expertise to do the job that they have to do under the statutes. And so that would be a great start. And to her credit, Dr. Friedhoff has been before Congress begging for more money, and they're not giving them enough. They're just not giving them enough. They need to at least double the staff in this particular division. The other thing that the public can do is to be cautious, to understand that EPA is not protecting you, and you have to take that on yourself. I mean, in some states, the states are trying to fill that gap. I mean, look at all the states that are suddenly starting to regulate PFAS: California, Massachusetts, Maryland, Maine, New Jersey, New York, Michigan, Wisconsin. These states are starting to fill that void that EPA is failing to fill themselves, but it's not enough. So people have to take their own actions to try to reduce their risks. And the way they do that is by educating themselves, by reading labels, and by just doing what they can to avoid some of these chemicals that really aren't necessary.
Kyla Bennett is a lawyer who works for Public Employees for Environmental Responsibility. She represents five EPA scientists turned whistleblowers who say managers and career staff in the EPA's Office of Chemical Safety and Pollution Prevention tampered with the assessments of dozens of chemicals to make them appear safer. And you can read more about this at yourcallradio.org. Kyla, thank you so much for your work, and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, Rose.
Thank you. Thanks to Malihe Razazan for producing today's show and Kevin Vance for engineering the show. And thank you for joining us. We will definitely continue to follow this. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.